Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon, American. And welcome to a Friday episode of Southern Sense American. Here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie. And as of this point, my co-host is missing in action. So if anyone sees Cool Mike out there, yeah, kick him in the butt and send him over this way. We've got a great, exciting show on. We're going to be talking with Colonel Riley of Operation American Spring and his co-partner, Jim Bennett. They will be on your show. If I can get my notes here correctly, bear with me, I'm a little backwards today. To Army Ranger Lieutenant Colonel Thomas W. Knowlton, who was killed in battle September 16th. And I just seem to have lost my guest. And I'm assuming Colonel Riley will be calling back in. So if that is the case, we will go then forward. Oh, he is back again. Okay, let's bring the Colonel on the air. And good afternoon, Colonel Riley.
Hey, good afternoon, Annie. How are you? Hello? Hello?
Radio is acting up. It's acting
Hello?
Up a little strange.
Hello?
Can anyone hear me out there?
Now I got you.
All right. It seems to be Blog Talk Radio, as usual, messes up the beginning of the show. And I would say out of the last 11 shows, they have done that to me 9 times. I apologize for the technical difficulties, but that is the amazing thing of the Internet. Well, welcome aboard, Colonel Riley.
Thank you, Annie. Very nice to be with you.
Well, let's just hope that your rally goes a little bit better than Blog Talk Radio does.
Well, we do have those gremlins that are popping around, don't we?
And if I don't have a troll attack at least by once a show, then I know I'm not doing something, air quotes in position, right.
Well, we just plow on through.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to welcome everyone that is out there in the chat room and that is listening in. I want to remind them that we're not only being simulcast on Blog Talk Radio, but we're on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina, Tea Party Community, and also Patriot Radio Network. So I thank all for supporting this show and by playing it. You've got this rally coming up next week, exactly 1 week from today, called Operation American Spring. Tell us about that.
Operation American Spring is a movement to challenge the lawless government, the lawless leaders, not the lawless government, the lawless leaders in Washington, D.C. I guess Operation American Spring has been coming on America for a long time, many decades. We've seen a kind of a dark cloud that's creeping across our nation as far as chomping and biting at the Constitution, taking little nips and pieces out of it in a subtle way. Not to the point that America has gotten alarmed and ready to rise up and say, wait a minute, the leadership is totally out of control like they are right now under the current administration. The idea is that we just the cauldron is bubbling out here, the lid is kind of quivering on top of this cauldron, and if we don't do something soon to kind of relieve the stress and all the pressure that America is under with regard to the inattention and the violations and the lawlessness of the leadership at the federal level, and to some degree, you know, down lower all the way, then we don't know. We're very worried about what could happen. So we, over the years, especially the last 5 or 6 years, we have done everything that we know possible to get the attention of the federal leaders to listen to us. We've called, faxed, visited Congress. We've screamed at them in town halls. We've even been up to D.C. a few times trying to get their attention, and basically they just look at us as a nuisance and ignore us and go on their merry way of doing what it is they want to do rather than be servants of we the people. So, you know, I guess it just came up and said, what in God's name can we do to try to get our position, to try to make an impact on these this leadership? And the idea of the Arab Spring came up, the Egyptians, and how they finally had a belly full, and they went to the streets in the millions, tens of millions. We're not modeling their government or their military or anything like that, but we're modeling the principle of people, we the people, in mass. And it can make differences in leadership who have gone astray. These folks over there didn't have the formal backing of anything that would guarantee them what they were doing was legal. But we do. We have the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence, which tells us that our Creator, that's where we get our rights, our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that whenever any forms of a government become destructive to these ends, then it's our right to do something about it. In fact, the Declaration goes on and says when a long train of abuses, which basically reflect an absolute despotism, it's our right, it's our duty to rise up and do what we can to correct that, to alter or abolish government. And certainly we're not talking about abolishing government. Our founding fathers gave us a solid system. But what we're doing is we're trying to raise just a mass, gigantic gathering of American citizens of patriots to D.C. beginning next Friday to challenge the lawlessness in Washington, D.C. And I could go on about that, but I'll take a break and let you get in here.
All right. Well, we do have a caller in on the line. He happens to be a fellow BTR host, and unbeknownst to him, I'm going to rope him in as co-host since my co-host, Cool Mike, is missing in action. Good afternoon, Thomas.
Hey, Ken. How are you?
All right. Thomas, you're going to have to get a little bit closer to your microphone. You kind of fade there. Colonel Riley, you know, you're talking about a massive rally in D.C., but what's going to make this any different than the one that the Tea Party groups held, say, back in 2009, 10, 11, 12? The Glenn Beck rallies, what's different about it?
Well, one thing, if Americans feel like we think they feel, in other words, like indicated, if this cauldron is bubbling the way I think it is and the lid is about to blow, then America is going to have to stand up. We're going to have to come together, and we're going to have to come to D.C. in millions and millions of patriots. And the difference is that not only is it going to be a larger group, but we're going to stay there as long as we possibly can, as long as our patriots can sacrifice to continue to send the message to let Washington and the rest of our nation know how desperate we feel about the potential loss, the grave danger our nation's in, the impact on our children, our grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, that we simply can't allow this leadership up there to take us down into a socialism, communist nation. It's what it will do will depend on the numbers and how God delivers this message up there. We believe that he's the wind behind this. Otherwise, we think it would have folded months ago, because we simply have no support at the national level. There's no big personality. There's no corporation. In fact, we don't even have a donation button on our websites. It's just the hearts and souls and courage of patriots that feel so strongly that our nation is in such grave danger simply because of self-servers, deceitful people that are in leadership positions in our government. So if we don't have the numbers we need and we can't stay there, then what you're suggesting may likely occur. It may not be any different than any of the rest of them. But we believe if we get these large numbers, because it's going to have an impact if we do on Washington, D.C., it can't help but interfere with traffic. It can't help but interfere with government function. But we have to send a message. Freedom isn't free. We've given too much blood, body parts, family destruction to allow this nation that our founding fathers presented us and the rights that our Creator gave us to be trampled by individuals who are basically just interested in serving their own agendas. So how it works out is going to depend on we the people. It's for sure we can no longer have the attitude of let someone else do it or it won't affect me, because though, if that happens, then it will be no different.
All right. What is the website if people want to take a look at your event next week?
The main website is OAS. That's the initials for Operation American Spring, OAS2014.com. You'll find everything on there and links to other websites, all the information. You'll find the packet that we've presented Congress. We presented Congress a packet that describes Operation American Springs as well as demands and grievances, and also another document that has articles of impeachment prepared by a constitutional lawyer who says are provable and legitimate and in the proper format. All Congress has to do is take action. So that's the best place to go, OAS2014.com.
I want to thank Cog for putting that up in the chat room. I also have it up on our show page. And I do believe your core cohort in this event is with us live. Is this Jim Bennett, area code 717?
It's Joe Bennett, actually.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Joe, welcome aboard to a Southern Sense. I'm your host, Annie, and I want to welcome you both aboard. Now, Colonel, give us a little bit of something about your background, because you did serve 34 honorable years in our service.
Yes, ma'am, I did, and that ended 20 years ago, so I'm not a spring chicken. But, you know, the whole idea that we just have to stand up, and this idea came off of a website that I've had for several years, and it just, for whatever reason, whether it was an inspiration of God, I don't know, but I put this mission and assumptions and process on there, and in early January it started gaining legs, and more people came and said, what can I do, what can I do, what can I do? And the first thing you know, we have a staff at the OAS level, and we have a state operations center that controls all the state units. We have access to 50 state groups. Some are much more advanced than others, but we do have a nationwide group that's working and planning on coming to Washington, D.C. So that's kind of how this developed. It just got legs, and here we are.
All right, well, I'm going to ask this question of Joe. A lot of people are saying to us that, you know, this massive occupation of D.C., it's just like another Occupy Wall Street. Is it?
It's actually the antithesis of that. I'm not sure if it was 6 or 8 months after the Occupy Wall Street event ended, but they finally came out with some sort of a statement of demands or manifesto. I'm not sure exactly what they called it, but it was things like, you know, free healthcare for life, free education for life, free daycare for life. There was just nothing that they stopped asking for. We're asking for nothing other than freedom. We're asking for the exact opposite of what Occupy Wall Street was asking for. Theirs was communism. They want central control. They want all power in the hands of the government, and they want to be cared for from cradle to grave. We're asking for the exact opposite. We want to be left alone to our own devices. We are a very resourceful people. We want to take care of ourselves and our children and those around us. It's the antithesis of that, and we're not going to go down there and damage anything. We're not going down there armed. I can guarantee you there won't be little pockets of drugs and weapons that they found in tents. I'm not going to say there aren't going to be people there that are going to be on board with us, that aren't going to be causing trouble, but they're not going to be with us in spirit. So it is not an Occupy Washington, D.C. This is Operation American Spring. It's the exact opposite of Occupy Wall Street.
All right, Jim, how did you get involved with this?
You mean Joe, me?
I'm sorry, Joe.
Okay.
I apologize.
No, that's okay. Just make sure there wasn't somebody else named Jim on the other line. I tell you, I'd heard just the name mentioned, didn't know anything about it, and then there was a lady who had was in charge of the Pennsylvania group, and my wife had – I've taken a personal stand, which is my own personal fight with the state of Pennsylvania for not standing up to federal tyranny. We're having to do this because the states are not doing their jobs. Now, obviously, not only is Washington, D.C. not obeying the Constitution, the enumerated powers gives them 11 things to do. I say 11 because there's about 6 or 7 defense-related things, and I group that into one. There are literally 11 general tasks for them to do. And when they overstep that line, that's illegal. It's unconstitutional, which makes it illegal. They're breaking the law. And the states should be stopping, just either ignoring it or protecting us from federal overreach. Instead, the states are in bed with the federal government. They have matching funds for different projects. And in fact, if the federal government even recognizes the Constitution, in a lot of situations, the states will say, well, here's what we'll do. We'll make a reciprocal law, which means that we're going to do it, which allows us to work with you in doing it. And they're not holding the line. They're not protecting us. And look at the trouble that we're having to go to do their job for them, to force the federal government to obey the law. So when I found out that that's exactly what was going on, I've spent the last 10-plus years trying to figure out how exactly to organize people to stand up, you know, two of us, four of us, 10 of us, to do exactly this. And when I found out somebody else had picked up that ball and moved it much further down the field than I certainly had, I knew I'd found a home. So I sent a few things I'd written to the state leader, and she passed them on. And when she had to step down, she asked me if I would step in. So I'm kind of new to this state leadership, you know, game. But I tell you, everyone I've talked to is they've been the most amazing people to a person. Everybody I've talked to has a strong belief in God. They believe that our Constitution was established by us to protect ourselves from our government, and that we are in a post-constitutional republic. And what we have now is certainly more of a tyrannical system or an oligarchy. So the question is, how do I not do this? How does any American who knows and understands and loves our country, how do they not get involved?
Well, it's funny. I'm watching the chat room as we're talking, and our friend Cog over there said that your letter has already been sent to President Obama, Representative Don Young, Senator Lisa Murkowski, and Senator Mark Begich. In the few minutes that we've just been here on the air, and he also writes that there are almost 12,000 actions have been taken so far. 12,000 of these letters have gone out. That is absolutely awesome. That is,
You're talking about specifically to the members of Congress and the president and all that?
Right, right.
Yeah, and the colonel would know much more about that than I, as far as who's been delivered what, and I have a feeling that a lot of people are sitting on it and not trying to respond, but the colonel certainly, if you have any information, I'd love to know if anyone's actually responded to it.
No, I don't know that any of the congressmen, any of the legislators have responded, other than you know, a pro forma little email back when they get something like that, but they haven't specifically addressed it, to my knowledge, to anyone, you know, specifically to the subject. It's interesting that it's pretty easy to go up on that OAS2014.com and click on that blog page, and you see the you know, the take action tab, and all you have to do is just click on that, and a little window comes up. You put your name and I guess zip code or maybe one other item, and send it off, and it goes right to the individual that's sending it, to their particular representative, their two senators, and to the White House. So 12,000, as you indicate, it would be nice if we had about 200,000, but and also the whole packet, the hard copy packet of that same exact thing that's on our website, has been delivered. It's been hand delivered to many of the Congress, but we got to a point where they wouldn't let us hand deliver them any longer, so we mailed them to them. So each legislator, all 535, have received a hard copy of that packet that contains the demands and grievances, the articles of impeachment, and about Operation American Spring.
All right, now you're doing this Operation American Spring in three different phases. How are you doing this? Why three different phases?
Well, obviously, right now we're in the mobilization phase. We're trying to reach out to America, to patriots that that feel like you know, the nation is in jeopardy, and they've gotten to the point where they feel it's absolutely essential, mandatory, to do something about it. So that's what we're doing right now. We're mobilizing to field the numbers of people that we need up in D.C. beginning next Friday. That's and we need millions. We really do need millions, and that will really be the key, because we know in the past that we've gone up there with 100,000 or 500,000. Or even a million or more, and it means absolutely nothing to the legislators. Again, they just sort of view this one day event and say, "Well, they'll be gone tomorrow," and you know, forget about it. That's phase one, and then when we get up there, we're going to expect that the Congress, the White House, who have gotten these demands, who understand our grievances, have gotten the articles of impeachment, we want to hear from them. We want a message from them. What are they going to do? The best thing that could possibly happen would be if we got 200 or 300 people out of the House of Representatives, maybe some senators, that would come down to the mall and join us and admit that they have been wrong, that they have not honored their oath, they have not followed the Constitution, they have been wrong, they have not been servants of we the people like the Constitution requires, and that they would make a commitment that they were going to reverse their position, they were going to go back to the Congress, and they were going to do everything within their power to cause a reversal in the power structure in the United States of America, meaning they were going to take on servant status, they were going to serve we the people, and we the people would be honored and represented, and the reflection would be that we are the ones with the power, the states and we the people. So how this is all going to turn out in that phase, we don't know. God willing, maybe a miracle. I don't know how it will happen. But we're going up there with those thoughts in mind. And finally, phase three, we believe that when we get back and begin constitutional restoration, the individuals who have been violating the law, who have been committing criminal acts and that are in power right now, then they're going to have to be held accountable. And we believe it'll be up to those individuals who begin this constitutional restoration to install the proper tribunal or the proper criminal investigations and hold these people accountable, bring them before the courts, and let justice be done. You know, it's one thing to talk about these things, but you know, this is serious. Lawlessness is destroying our nation. Our whole way of life is in jeopardy. Everything that our children, grandchildren, great grandchildren hope for may be nothing but a socialist, communist environment. I've referred to it as the USSA, the ugly socialist states of America, and we simply don't want that. We want to have a nation that's free like it has been. None of us want to see any kind of violence. We're going up there completely lawful, nonviolent, unarmed, law-abiding, working with the D.C. police, the park police, and even policing ourselves. You know, we have security. We have security teams that we've established. We've got a large medical team that we've established, all through volunteers. Nothing but grassroots pushing this up and volunteers making it work. So it's the heart of America, and we believe exactly what our founding fathers expected when they drafted our Constitution under the guidance of our Creator, of what we are expected to do. Free people exercising under the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and freedom to present our demands and grievances.
All right, well, we got another person in the chat room, Joe Goldner, who actually ran against Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and he set his set out, which went out to Obama, Rubio, Nelson, and Hastings. So we're getting those letters going out. Now, there's a couple of questions on this because, you know, poking around the internet, doing my research for today, you know, I saw a lot of contradictory sites, and there's more than one Facebook page. How do people know whether or not they're on the real Facebook page for you guys?
Well, there's only really one. Our primary web page is oas2014.com. There are a couple of websites out there that or Facebook pages that are using the Operation American Spring logo or banner, if you will. But if you look at them, and the mission, their mission is not what our mission on OAS 2014 and Operation American Spring.org, if that mission statement on these other pages is not exactly the same, then there's something else. There are others out there who are dealing with specific amendments or other issues, but if the mission is not the same, then it's not an official valid supporter of Operation American Spring going to D.C. May the 16th.
All right, now you're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I seem to have lost my secondary co-host, Thomas, so if you can hear us, call back in, Thomas. Our call line is open at this time. It's 917-889-3675 if you'd like to ask any questions of Colonel Riley or Joe Bennett of Operation American Spring. We welcome your calls. Now, Colonel, one of the things, we recently had the huge scandals over the NSA. You know, the second you say the NSA, everyone flips out. Now, you used to work for them. Are you connected with them any longer, or?
No. I retired from the military in 20 years ago, and at that time I was debriefed. Have not had any contact whatsoever with NSA since then. But the when I left NSA, the enemy was the Soviet Union, Communist China, North Korea, the communist nations. Now, I'm the enemy because Barack Obama has turned NSA against America. NSA is now surveilling every single one of us, everything we say, everything we write on, every email we write, every fax we send is gobbled up. And this is part of the problem of the unconstitutional nature of government these days, not government of lawless leaders. Again, government structure is fine, but when you get lawless leaders in those positions of authority, then they tend to migrate off to their own self-serving interests, their own agendas, and care little about we the people. So, you know, I certainly am appalled to think that this professional organization, and, you know, it's not the people in the organization. It usually isn't. They're doing what it is they're directed to do, but the leadership of our nation has directed the director of the National Security Agency to approach the way they are, turned on us. So that is very disturbing to me, and it's just another indicator of the freedom that we're losing. President Bush, when they pushed this Patriot Act, this was another thing. This started the slippery slope, much like abortion. Way back when abortion was talked about, everybody said, "Oh, this is just going to be just once in a while. This is going to happen. This is not going to be, you know, this will just be only just now and then." And now, we're pulling babies out of the birth canal and jabbing them in the back of the head and sucking their brains out and killing them. And we look at Al-Qaeda and say they're barbaric. God have mercy on our nation.
Now, we got Thomas back. Welcome back, Thomas. Glad to have you with us. Do you have a question for either one of our guests, Thomas?
No, Annie, I'm just listening in. I'll mute.
Okay. All right. Now, once you get to D.C., you've got these articles of impeachment. Do you think any action would actually be taken on them?
Well, that's the, what do they say, the $64,000 question. I think the only way we're going to get any solution or any impact, it all boils down to we the people. The politician, I guarantee you, their ears perk up when they see numbers. They live on numbers. They die on numbers. Anytime we can put together millions of people, you can bet that they will pay attention to it. Will we get any legitimate action? I'm hearing more and more rumor in about Congress starting to talk about impeachment. We're starting to see more and more of the media, not the mainstream media, of course, but other media offshoots that are starting to talk more and more about the legitimacy of Obama, whether he's even meets the criteria of the Constitution to serve. So we, you know, about everything that he has locked up, we know nothing about. So there's, you know, the lawlessness goes on to such a degree that it's just, I mean, it covers everything. The heels coming down on the states, the fast and furious events, the Benghazis, the scandals over IRS, the Tea Party attacks, and what you just mentioned, the NSA treachery, not even to mention the debt that we'll never be able to climb out of. I have no idea what is going to happen there. You see more and more reports that we're going to have, there's going to be a total crash of the dollar and the economy. It's just, people don't say if, it's just when. So these lawless and self-serving leadership have just led us into such a very frightening situation. And unfortunately, we the people have let it happen. We have allowed this attitude and these groups in Congress to carry on. And now we're going to have to try to plow ourselves out of it.
No, it's funny you mentioned that everything's coming to a head. And I had said that over the last couple of shows, that everything seems to be centering around mid-May at this moment. There's the rally that's going to be going on, the Freedom Rally here in the Charleston area up in Mount Pleasant on Saturday the 17th with Herman Cain. There's a new organization, I Am American. Louis Moran was on the show talking about all the events that are happening in May. You've got your event. And I see time and time again, everything is centering around that. It's as if it's a vortex and starting to suck everything into it. I don't know if you're feeling the same thing, but people are waking up like I've never seen them before. We woke up in 2009, but this is different. It has a different feel to it.
Can I talk about that, Colonel?
Go.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
When Obama was running the first time around, I was concerned that if McCain had won and then if Romney had won even the second time, my concern was that we would have more of the same that we had under Bush. And it's a slow bleed. I think Bush was a good man. I think he's the kind of guy you want as your neighbor, but he certainly wasn't the kind of guy that I think we wanted as the president of the United States that was leading our country and should have been obeying his oath to the Constitution that he swore to us, to we the people. So it was a slow bleed, and I know that I waited, and I waited, and I waited for Bush to do the right thing, and I thought, well, maybe the next term in Congress, maybe, you know, after the midterm elections, and well, maybe after his next. And he never did. He never stood up for the Constitution. He gave us a tax break, a tax cut, and then he increased the size of government tremendously, meaning that the tax cut would go away. So I got to this point where I thought, you know what? As it gets worse, people are starting to wake up. And even under Bush, we saw things getting worse. The government was growing tremendously, which means the Democrats were certainly advancing their causes. But Obama is the gift that keeps on giving. He is the guy that will not leave anything alone. Everything he touches, he destroys. And people can't ignore it any longer. And it is us. We have been responsible. They definitely take the blame for the damage they've done for swearing an oath they had no intention of ever keeping, which in my mind has to be treason. They're not speeding. They're not murdering. They're not even engaged in organized crime. They intentionally lobbied to put themselves in positions of power where they could put their hands on our Constitution. And from day one, they've been shredding it. And I can't think of anything more definitionally treasonous than that. Now, of course, they're going to have to be that discussion is going to have to be taken up with people who understand maybe treason better than I do, but I can't think of anything that would be more the definition of treason than destroying our very form of government, the very document that defines who we are in our relationships to our government and to each other as states. The fact that we have crossed some sort of line where there's this massive number of people who are stepping up, I got to tell you, I've tried for probably 25 years to motivate people and to talk to them about how bad it's been. And, you know, the Colonel certainly listed a number of things. And if you go to OAS 2014 and scroll down towards the bottom, there's a document right in the middle of the bottom of the screen. You click on it, and you can see the actual packet that was delivered to Congress. And it lists, it's a good, solid list of crimes against our country, against the people, against the Constitution. And there are a lot of reasons, and whatever is motivating people, maybe it was the fact that we hit 57 million babies that have been slaughtered, innocent babies in the safest place they'll ever be, the most innocent of us. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's your issue that makes you go down to D.C. You know, maybe it's that you're paying 50 to 70% of your income to the government for them to literally buy votes with. We are funding our own demise. We're the supply line for our enemies. And whatever it is, people are certainly being pushed across whatever the breaking point is. And I knew myself years ago, I've had to, it's been a hard thing just to put this wooden spoon in my mouth and I just bite hard on it just to keep from losing my mind. I don't know what it was, I didn't know what it was going to take for people to be motivated, but by golly, it's happened, and happened in big ways, I think, across the spectrum. There's just nothing they haven't damaged. So people are finding their own motivation, and whatever it is that's bothering you, and you know it's the result of the socialistic monstrosity, this communistic monstrosity that's taken over our government. What we see as our federal government is not our federal government. The Constitution defines our federal government, and they've obliterated that. They've buried it under this mountain of bureaucracy and legislation and taxation. That is not our country. What we have now is something else entirely. So whatever your motivation is, thank you very much for finally having, you know, been bothered enough. And join us. Please, please join us in D.C. And if you cannot make it, then call your congressman and ask him why he hasn't crossed that line, that the Constitution was erected to, you know, protect us, the people, from our government, to define our government and then protect us from them. And ask them why they haven't crossed back across the line to stand with us and to honor that oath. So one way or the other, people have something they can do.
Well, I've been following a bunch of different things, and someone sent me an email, and I apologize because I don't know where I put it, but there's supposed to be a new legislation going up in the House demanding return to the constitutionality of Congress itself. And I sent it on to my congressman, Mark Sanford, asking him to look into this and get back to me. Let me know, you know, what is it? Because I couldn't seem to find it. All I had was email saying that this legislation is going to be going up, and I believe it's on Monday the 12th. I wish I had a response from him, but I haven't gotten yet. But I'm seeing actions by not only just everyday people like you, like others out there, like the Colonel, but now I'm seeing that some of them in Congress are actually having the cojones to finally come up with something and say, wait a minute, we've got to take a step back. The Ted Cruz's, the Trey Gowdy's are finally taking action and coming to the forefront. Are you seeing the same thing that I think I'm seeing?
I think so. I think the important thing that's happening is that we are the wind at their backs. We're the wind in their sails. If we don't show up in D.C. on May 16th, or if you can't show up then a day later or 2 days later, if you can get down there just a couple days out of the week, go home and then come back next week. If we do that, these honorable men and women who want to do the right thing, who want to obey the law, and they want their fellow congressmen and senators to obey the law as well, they're not going to get that job done. There was a bill a while back that they kept on trying to pass where people were going to be forced in Congress to simply state across the top of whatever law that they had that where the heck in the Constitution does it say you have a right to pass this law? Is if it's not in the enumerated powers, then how in the world do you think you can get this thing? And I don't know if they ever got that passed. And I think as years went by, fewer and fewer people actually signed on to that. So it's got to be us. The honorable people there want to do the right thing, but they know it's not going to go anywhere if we, the people, don't demand it. If we don't show up in D.C. and look them straight in the eye, they can't ignore us. If we're in their faces, they can't ignore us. If we're in our states and we're working our jobs and mowing our grass, they'll continue to ignore us. That cannot happen any longer. It's too far into the game, and they're winning.
I'm hoping that they don't win, that we do succeed. Go ahead, Colonel.
I was just going to say exactly what Joe's saying there, that, you know, they just wait. You know, we go up there for a day or 2 days. You know, they'll wait a few days and just totally ignore what was what the subject was and then going about their business. You know, they just let these things, you know, if you get a surge into the house about this or that, they'll just, they may make a, you know, a small attempt to do something, and then they'll wait a while and just let it die. The one thing I think that did have an impact was when Obama was trying to figure out what he was going to do with Syria, and I think the numbers that went into the White House and went into Congress to keep your hands off of Syria, keep your hands off of Syria. We don't want to be bogged down with any more these, you know, these ridiculous body bag events. Keep us out of there. That got their attention, and that's what we need. That's what we need beginning next Friday. We need these numbers, these gigantic numbers of which they respond to. If we don't get that, then basically they take a message from it. Because they live and die on numbers, as I said. If they see this thing going in gigantic numbers and staying there, obviously at a reduced number because everybody can't stay there. People will do work, have jobs, but if we can keep a flow in there over a long period of time, it's going to have an impact, and it will produce results, and God help us to it will be the beginning. And maybe, as Joe says, be the wind behind the backs of these legislators who do really, in their hearts, believe and want to get back to the Constitution.
All right, I want to remind everyone you're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio, as well as Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina, TeaPartyCommunity.com, and Patriot Network Radio. And I want to remind anyone that's on Facebook and frustrated with Facebook's liberalism and the way they censure us and limit us in doing anything, check out Tea Party Community. It works just like Facebook, but without all the restrictions, and it's for like-minded Republicans and conservatives and Tea Party activists. So check out TeaPartyCommunity.com. If you go over there, tell Tim Sr. and Jr. that I sent you. That's a good website if you guys ever wanted to check and spread some of your word, because they started off a little, maybe a year and a half ago, and when I joined, they had like under 100,000. They're now going up over 200,000 and climbing, and God bless these guys. They work hard at it. But that's another thing, is people are finding other ways to communicate. You're doing it through this event. I'm doing it through the radio show. Tim Silkey's doing it through the Tea Party Community. And all these things are starting to mesh together. And I think it's the amount of voices finally uniting in enough of a cry to say, stop.
And that's the key, is unity. You nailed it there. And that's one of the reasons why you know, Operation American Spring has focused on constitutional restoration. You know, there's many groups out there that are either focused on the Second Amendment, maybe the Tenth Amendment, the Ninth Amendment, the 16th Amendment. All those things are worthy. And, you know, Tea Party groups have worthy agendas. So many groups have worthy agendas. But if we have a leadership in Washington, D.C., that just fails to obey the Constitution, then there's no way we can hope to get anything changed with regard to the smaller agendas, if you will. How can you expect to get, say, if you have an issue with the Tenth Amendment, you want some modifications, you might get the modification. Chances are you won't, but even if you did, then what's going to happen is the federal government, if it doesn't like it, will come down like it did on Arizona when, you know, one of the powers that the feds are supposed to handle is our sovereignty, to watch our borders. They weren't doing it, so Arizona said, well, we will help. We'll pass a law that mirrors the federal requirements, and we'll do it. And the feds said, no, 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 no. you can't take care of your own people. We don't want you to do that. So they found a judge, and eventually, you know, the law got nullified. Same thing happened in Alabama and some of the Carolinas where they were trying to deal with, you know, with...
Well, here in South Carolina was the voter ID, and they haven't knocked
that
yet.
Yeah, there you go. You know, just to bolster the ballot box, that's all. And, you know, and the feds, you know, made a big issue out of that. So the states are intimidated. The heel of the federal government comes down on states. So we the people are caught in the middle. If our states won't support us, if the federal government won't support us, if we can't have any control over any of that, then we're just left out there. We're just dangling. We don't know what we're about. We don't know who to trust. We don't know what law from day to day is going to be valid. I mean, we've seen what Obama has done with the health care thing. He's changed things just at his whim, and Congress just lets him do it. So that clearly shows that we no longer have three equal branches of government because they're not exercising their responsibility of oversight. So, you know, if you just analyze it, now I don't know if it's been a coup up there by the bankers and the world rich people, but they're basically controlling everything. They're not controlling it through the Constitution. It's however it fills the pocketbook and the bank accounts of these in groups. And that's what we're fighting against. And believe me, when the scripture says, money being evil, the way it's used is the evil part, not money being evil in itself. But we're certainly seeing it being evilly abused in the world today, and certainly in the U.S. All the stuff that happens with lobbyists and everything else at the federal level. So we're in a mess. I mean, it's a chaotic situation. Our nation is in grave danger. The longevity of what we've known is threatened. And we're trusting that this is the time, and we hope that it's not too late. Many people think that if we don't correct it now, that this may be the last hope we have in trying to do it peacefully.
Joe had said something that caught my ear. That he didn't care what the cause was, but just to get yourself to D.C. to help support this. But I think the main problem we're having is we're being hit in so many different sides and so many different angles by the left with all these violations of our rights, our liberties, and the Constitution, that sometimes it's just too hard to keep track, and then people's heads just explode, and then they just sit there in a daze and it's like, well, I'm not going to do anything because there's just too much happening.
I think that's by design. I think they overwhelm us, and it's also kind of the nature, I think, of socialism. They try to regulate everything. They think that they can have some little think tank sit down and a bunch of whiz kids come up with, you know, some sort of eventuality for every scenario and create a rule and a regulation and a tax and a fee for it. So they have their hands in every aspect of our lives, and it gets to be quite a bit. I mean, life itself is, you know, pretty challenging. But when the government gets involved, it goes exponential. So it's death by a thousand cuts with these people. There's just nothing that they won't say or they won't do. And we know for a fact, and I love what the Colonel said about the different groups and the causes. The Constitution is the center stone. It's the keystone. And being from the Keystone State, I've given this a little bit of thought. It is the one thing that if we can get them to obey, it's the one issue, that if we can get them to obey the Constitution, there isn't a conservative group across the country that doesn't benefit. And I don't mean benefit a little bit. It's possible their entire group could just disband and they could go home. The Constitution is the very thing that we need to stand up and fight to restore. And once it's restored, the government will get their hands out of our lives. They will stop treating states, our sovereign states, we'll stop treating them like counties. We're not counties. When we came together, we were the country of Pennsylvania, the country of New York. When we signed the Declaration of Independence, we had not joined together in any other regard except to stand up to the king and his tyranny. Beyond that, then we had to seriously debate, what were we going to do? Were we going to try to come together as a union, and what was that union going to look like? And the results of course, we had the Articles of Confederation, and they went baby steps, just tiny little baby steps up to the Constitution. And although you could talk to, you know, some of our founders were furious that they had gone entirely too far with the Constitution, and I'm sure they anticipated exactly what we're dealing with today. So when, you know, when I say whatever your issues are, I figure that most of the issues that people have are usually related to the fact that the federal government and the state governments and people who serve at the state level also swore an oath to the Constitution. They have disobeyed their oath. They have not honored it, and I would say it's very clear that they never had any intention of honoring it in the first place. And the beautiful thing, I think, about Operation, and people ask me, you know, why, what exactly is this? And I, at this point, I'm having more people say they've never heard of it than have heard of it, but I think that's quickly going to change. I tell them, what we have is a gentleman who has served honorably his country for his entire career, and he honored his oath. The colonel took that oath seriously, and he honored it. He stands in stark contrast to the men and women that we have in Congress today. He is a guy that if they honored their oath, they'd be standing shoulder to shoulder with him May 16th and onward. And that's not just them. Law enforcement, I didn't know that even local law enforcement agents, local police officers, swear an oath to the Constitution.
Oh, yes,
every,
we do.
Yeah, at every level of government, we have people who have sworn this oath, and I have a feeling they just don't know the Constitution that they swore an oath to. And one of the beautiful things about this event is I think we're going to show people exactly what country they live in. We're going to show them the powers and the rights that are theirs, and we're going to introduce them to their Constitution. It's the most beautiful document written by man, and it's about time that Americans actually know what country they live in.
All right, we got another caller coming in, and I do believe this is a friend of mine. Is this Joe on the phone here from Florida?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Joe. Joe Goldner actually ran against Deborah Wasserman Schultz. Unfortunately, he didn't win, but he had the guts and the glory to do it. Good afternoon, Joe. You have a question for our guest.
No, I agree with everything you said, and I'm all for it. In fact, I promoted you guys while you were talking on the radio all the last hour or so around the areas and through the social media to see where it goes. So you're getting a lot more people sending those email faxes and stuff going to the particular politicians. Now, there is a lot of people, especially the younger crowds, that believe that the Constitution is a living thing, and when you explain it's not, it's like the Bible, there's a big debate developing about, well, it's constantly developing, and you keep telling them, no, it's not, it's the basis for everything. What's your comment on that?
Colonel, can I ask a quick answer real quick, and if you want to have some comments, there was an interesting conversation I had with our neighbor across the road. We were talking for about 2 hours about different generally conservative issues and why those issues beat the liberal issues. And it wasn't until I got to that issue and I said that the Constitution isn't a living, growing document. And she basically threw her hands up and said, I'm done. And she walked away. And this is a very friendly relationship with our neighbor. And I think after 2 hours, it probably is about time anyway to, you know, go about our business. But a week later when I talked to her, I had been thinking about this, and I said, you know, I ran across, she's a teacher, and she's part of the teachers' union, of course, and I said, I talked to one of the school board members, and they were very excited to know that you thought the Constitution was a living document, because he said the next time that he goes to negotiate the teachers' union, or before then, he said that it's good to know that you believe that it's a document, that it's not a contract that's written in stone, that we can modify it, you know, according to our whim and our will. And I said, I also talked to your banker. And he's glad to know that you believe that your mortgage is a living, growing document. And whether your interest rates, the amount you pay per month. And she sat, she kind of looked up, and she said, very good point. There's nothing else in our lives that we apply that standard of a living document to. They say that because it's convenient for them. Of course they want it to be a living document because it impedes them from achieving what they want to achieve, which is
exactly
tyranny.
Well, the good thing is that my kid, he's in ninth grade, and he's special needs, but they were teaching him about the Constitution, and I got, you know, I also belong to the Heritage Foundation, so I have a copy of the Constitution, or the handbook. So I gave it to him, and then he showed the teacher. Now the teacher wants me to order 15 Constitution copies from the Heritage Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I would just add to that, you know, the Constitution as it's written, I view it as in stone. That doesn't mean that the Constitution can't be amended. That we have 27 amendments to the Constitution, but there's a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the Constitution can't be treated as, you know, the philosophy of relativism. Whenever, you know, if it feels good, do it, and we'll just make our own decisions or about what one paragraph or one article of the Constitution means. The founders were smart enough to know that if anything comes up that the Republic feels that needs to be modified or changed, then there's a way to do that. And it can be done, but this living thing is a bunch of malarkey that you can't do. You can't just look at it. Neither can the courts, and they're the big violators too of deciding that
the Supreme Court's a big violator with the Obamacare, among other things.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I mean,
they're gonna have several bites at the apple this year. Let's see if they correct it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's a lawsuit right now. I believe it's in a circuit court in D.C. A little group of Pacific something or other is challenging Obamacare because it originated in the Senate and not in the House. It's a bill of revenue. It's a bill of spending. And by the Constitution, it should be coming from the House and not the Senate. Therefore, it should be invalidated. But we'll see what happens. Now, this court that's going before has three judges appointed by Obama, two of them recently. So you know that's going to get kicked up to the Supreme Court. So we'll just wait and see.
And now, the Supreme Court, by ruling it a tax and not a mandate, had put it as a financial, so in itself put it in that position, so they got only one ruling to make.
Yeah. unless they put themselves, contort themselves like Roberts did,
yeah,
in deciding it was a tax.
But if they side against, see, this is, they'll put themselves in the rock and the hot place now, because if they don't rule in favor of that lawsuit and say it because it was originating in the wrong spot,
mm-hmm,
they have to eliminate the premise of that being a tax, which makes it a mandate, which means they're going to have to kick it out because it's a mandate, it's unconstitutional. So they cornered themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Now, we got a question up in the chat room. This goes a little bit off subject. Cat Girl wants to know about your impression with the VA cooking the books and all the vets being waiting months and months and records disappearing. Now, I got to admit, I recently lost my father back in October, who happened to have been a World War II veteran. And I could remember getting calls from my mom frustrated because they lived in St. Thomas. The VA they went to was in Puerto Rico. And she would wait months upon months before he would get an appointment for treatment. And I have to sit back now after seeing all that's coming up in the news, wondering how much that attributed to his longevity. And
it's absolutely despicable. And Joe alluded to the real issue. I think it's a bureaucracy, and it's the self-serving attitudes of leadership. There's so much bureaucracy that and regulations that it just takes forever to wind itself through this morass and actually get someone treated. The facilities, if you go into these VA facilities, I mean, most of them that I've been in are top-notch. You know, they've got great facilities. They provide services, but you know, there's also an attitude, I think, in VA that we're really not too interested in your condition. Many people are on a second careers in VA, I've had personal experience with my VA, and I've seen what has gone on. And it's just one of those things where there is no real commitment to fix things. The bureaucracy is so huge. I mean, the President of the United States can say something, and it may take years for it to get done. there's such a tangled mess that's been done by this ever growing federal bureaucracy.
It's got to be the Detroitization. What's happened to the VA, I think, is what's happened to Detroit. It's socialism. It kills everything it touches, and unfortunately, the people who deserve it the least are having to experience that firsthand.
Unfortunately, and like I said, I'm wondering, you know, just how much my father would have been more comfortable and how much longer he would have lived had he had the proper care at the proper time. And it's not just from my own experience. You've got guys returning home from the war on terror, and they get shuffled to the side. You know, we spoke about this. Fox News had, I believe last year, a report on the record center where the floors were actually starting to buckle and collapse because of the weight of the paperwork because nothing was computerized. They have the reports here about the place in Phoenix, but last year there was another report on, I believe it was San Diego, where they were told to destroy records. If anyone was waiting 6 months or more, destroy the records. So that way there's no record to prove that someone applied for medical care.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going on for a long time. Finally, the news is picking it up. You know, when they realize it's someone's father, brother, sister, uncle, grandparent, now it hits home. And because it's hitting home, the news is picking it up. And I think that's the problem. If it doesn't hit home, people don't pay attention.
I don't think people understand exactly what a wonderful thing freedom actually is. Freedom builds its personal responsibility. If you're free, you have to take responsibility for your life, and it builds strength. Socialism is an asset. It destroys. It builds dependency, and it's a bureaucracy. It destroys everything it touches. Isn't there? There's a town I think in Georgia that privatized everything. Their street cleaning, their public works. I think it was all privatized. And they say the streets they've never been cleaner. The guys that are working there on the trucks are, you know, they're hopping to, you know, they're digging their holes and filling them in and patching the asphalt, and everything is just, you know, click click click. That's not socialism. There isn't, you know. The whole idea of going to the DMV, it benefits the liberals because it creates jobs for people who, you know, want those job protections, and it goes against everything we believe in. You know, the idea of freedom means no bureaucracy. It means that we take responsibility for ourselves. You know, and we obviously had to have some form of government, so we wrote our Constitution, and it created that government. And I said for the longest time, if we could get rid of, I think literally, the enumerated powers, there's these 11 things. The big thing is defense. In our budget, I think it might, maybe, I'm just trying to remember from the last time I saw a chart, I think it might be a third of our budget, and we have the most expensive military on the planet. Well, now that the Chinese have gone nuts, who knows, but I think two-thirds of our budget goes towards these socialistic systems. And it's socialism for people who haven't served in our military. If we could get rid of all this government bureaucracy, roll it back, and the government took care of what they, you know, the few things that they're supposed to do, defense is one of those. Taking care of our veterans when they come back is, you know, is part of that. I don't even know if we would recognize what this country looks like. And we would certainly free up the resources to take care of these guys. And I think freedom is a pretty contagious thing. We just need to introduce people to it. And I do believe Operation American Spring is going to do exactly that, to start that conversation at the very least. And boy, oh boy, I'm hoping for a lot more than that.
Well, Joe, if they did that, you know what would happen? It would put the paper industry out of business.
And the accountants, all the guys who prepare our taxes and all that. And you know what? I feel bad for them, but a lot of us have had to, you know, either look for jobs, have lost jobs, and, you know, let them join that line, you know, while the other, or get a different skill set, you know, and be productive in a free market. I'm not going to feel too bad for them.
Oh, but wait a minute. According to our government, we have to bring in all these immigrant workers to fill these jobs.
Yeah, if we get rid of all the government handouts, wouldn't those people suddenly need jobs?
Yeah. Well, again, the website is oas2014.com, and I want to thank Cog, because Cog keeps on putting it up in the chat room. Thank you for being my secret co-host today, even though I don't have my normal co-host. You're listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick Annie, along with Colonel Riley and Joe Bennett of Operation American Spring. You know, what can people expect when they get to D.C.? Is there like hotel rooms set aside? Are people going to be camping on the mall? What will they physically expect when they get there?
Well, for the most part, everybody has made you know, made the arrangements. They're taking care of themselves, and some are doing exactly as you suggest. They are camping, not on the mall. We're not allowed to do that, but they're camping, you know, on the outskirts of D.C. Some in camping, actual, you know, private campsites. Others are camping on private land that just happens to be made available for us. Camping in the woods. Some are living in hotels, motels. Some are staying with family, friends. So it's just a whole. Any place they can find to stay, but one thing for sure, it's not a catered event. Everyone has to take care of themselves. There's no way that we, as a a non-funded small volunteer group, can arrange everything. We can't take care of buses or hotels or anything like that. Everybody's taking care of themselves, and so far as I know, based on what I've heard, we've got a lot of people exercising super initiative, and maybe finding a campsite, and then letting everybody else know, and then kind of coordinating with the people to get there. So it's American ingenuity for the most part in getting this thing done.
Wow, because I'm watching some of the people posting in the chat room locations to campsites and stuff. So I want to thank you guys. You know, you're getting a lot of support for this one. You know, once everyone gets down there and you have your rally in the mall, you said you don't have any prominent speakers. So what's going to happen then?
Well, we're going to... The one reason we're not going to have speakers in the conventional sense is, one, we can't afford tens of thousands of dollars to buy a stage or to, you know, have these expensive sound systems. And the second aspect is we really don't need speakers to tell us who we are or what we are doing or what the problems are. We know that. That's why we're there. What we are doing is many Blog Talk Radio hosts are going to be there posting and videoing and speaking and reporting live back to America. OAS is going to have our own live stream through OAS2014.com, and we're going to be doing that through smartphones. I think we're going to have, I believe I heard Alex say, Alex Coffey, he really manages the OAS2014.com site. We're going to have maybe 10 different links of people who will be out all over the area videoing everything that's going on and real-time streaming it back through OAS2014. So everybody in America is going to be able to see what's going on, whether the mainstream media or anything in D.C. shows it or not. Now, obviously, if for some reason, you know, we get a vindictive administration and they decide they're going to shut the Internet down, well, if they do that, they shut it down for everybody, and I doubt if they do that. So we are going to be able to show we the people what's going on, and we're hoping that will motivate them to come on and keep the flow going beyond May the 16th and 17th. And I'd also mention that on May the 15th, the night of May the 15th, we're gonna meet for a prayer time, lifting up the operation, lifting up our nation. Then on Sunday, one of our pastors, who is also, you know, an OAS member, we have several pastors who are members of OAS. Pastor Sylvester Bland, he's from California. He's going to be conducting a church service on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. So we're going to have a time of church on Sunday. Then Monday we go back to the mall with all of our crowds and continue in our movement to action and waiting for what Congress and the White House are going to say to us.
All right. Wow. I've got a show on Friday, again, 2 to 3:30. So have some of your people call into the show and tell them, you know, tell us what's going on in the mall.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to have that.
Surely. Hopefully they'll be looking at OAS2014.com and they'll be able to give you, you know, firsthand information.
Oh, man. Are you going to have people also link up, you know, by sending text messages by their phones so that if you have something going on, you can send a message to someone in attendance saying, this is happening at this location at this time?
Oh, I'm positive that's going to be going on. I mean, we're going to have probably hundreds, if not thousands, of videos going on, trying to make sure we capture everything. Whether it's, we hope it's not our people doing any mischievous stuff, but to capture any behavior that is trying to create a disturbance, we want to make sure we're able to capture all of that stuff. So I'm sure that individuals are going to be texting back to maybe blog talk shows or sending videos and that type of thing, all, you know, as we move through the event.
Well, I'm going to wish you a lot of luck. You've got yourself a handful of stuff going on, and, you know, just the coordination of everything, it just is amazing, amazing. And God bless you guys for stepping in and doing this. We are coming down to our final 10 minutes of the show, and I have a dedication that I would like to be doing. So I want to thank you, Colonel Riley and Joe Bennett, for stopping by. You're welcome to hang on as I do the dedication, because Colonel Riley, you should know this individual comes to be the very first intelligence officer in the U.S. Army, the Army Ranger, Lieutenant Colonel Thomas W. Knowlton, who was killed in battle September 16, 1776, at the Battle of Harlem Heights, New York. So I want to thank you, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you, Annie. God bless you.
God bless. And good luck. That's OAS2014.com. And it's Colonel Riley and Joe Bennett of Operation American Spring. Good luck and God bless you, gentlemen.
You too.
Okay. Since I do not have a official co-host, I'm going to be kind of like winging this, and let me see if I can find my music here. And this dedication is to Lieutenant Colonel Thomas W. Knowlton, who was an American patriot who served in the French and Indian War and was a colonel during the American Revolution. Knowlton is considered America's first intelligence professional, and his unit, Knowlton's Rangers, made a significant contribution to intelligence gathering during the early Revolutionary War. Knowlton was killed in action at the Battle of Harlem Heights. He was born into a military family on November 22, 1740, in West Boxford, Massachusetts. When he was only 8, his family relocated to a farm in Ashland, Connecticut. At 15, Knowlton served in the French and Indian War with his older brother Daniel. He enlisted under Captain John Durkee's company and is known to have joined Daniel in scouting missions into enemy territory. He later served in Captain John Slapp's 8th Company, where he served with Thorpe Chapman. He served during 6 campaigns in the war and was promoted to lieutenant in 1760. He also fought in Israel Putnam's company against the Spanish during the British expedition against Cuba in 1762. By August 1762, Knowlton had returned home and married Anna Keyes. He and his wife raised 9 children. At the age of 33, Knowlton was appointed a selectman of Ashford, Connecticut. On April 18, 1775, General Thomas Gage dispatched a contingent of British troops to Lexington and Concord, about 15 miles from Boston. This action led to the outbreak of hostilities that became the American Revolution. On learning of the battles of Lexington and Concord, the militias of Massachusetts and Connecticut communities mobilized their members. Thomas Knowlton joined his militia, the Ashford Company, which became part of the 5th Connecticut Regiment, along with the men from Windham, Mansfield, and Coventry. Knowlton was chosen unanimously as captain and led 200 men into Massachusetts. His force consisted of farmers without uniforms, primarily armed with shotguns. He was ordered to Charleston to join Colonel William Prescott, Knowlton's troops were sent by Colonel Prescott to oppose advancing British grenadiers and took their posts on the side of Breed's Hill. Using a fence rail as a base, the men threw up a parallel fence, and filling the space between the new mown grass formed an effective breastwork. There they held their ground until the general retreat and were among those providing cover as the troops retreated. Only three of Knowlton's company died in that battle. Years later, Colonel Aaron Burr said, "I had a full account of the battle from Knowlton's own lips, and I believe if the chief command had been entrusted to him, the issue would have proven more fortunate. It was impossible to promote such a man too rapidly." In June 1775, for his bravery at Bunker Hill, Knowlton was promoted by Congress to major. One of his men later remembered that Knowlton was courageous to a fault, never crying, "Go on, boys," but always, "Come on, boys." On January 8, 1776, he led a troop in a successful incursion into Charleston to burn housing used by British officers. On August 12, 1776, General of the Army George Washington promoted Knowlton to lieutenant colonel. He was ordered to select an elite group of men from Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts to carry out reconnaissance missions, America's first official spies. Knowlton's Rangers were also the first organized American elite troop, analogous to a modern special forces unit. The famous American spy, Captain Nathan Hale, was under the command of Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Knowlton. The date 1776 on the modern U.S. Army's Intelligence Service seal refers to the formation of Knowlton Rangers. On September 16, 1776, Knowlton's Rangers, outfitted as a regiment of light infantry, were scouting in advance of Washington's army at the Battle of Harlem Heights. They stumbled upon the Black Watch, an elite Highlander British unit with a detachment of Hessians. They managed a successful retreat, but re-engaged the enemy with support of a unit led by Major Andrew Veatch of Virginia. General Washington ordered the units to fall in the enemy's rear, while a feint in front engaged the British troops. An American, premature, shot into the right flank of the British and ruined Washington's element of surprise and placed Knowlton's Rangers and the Virginians at risk. Once the premature shot had been fired, Knowlton rallied his troops to carry on the attack. Both commanding officers were killed in front of their men. Knowlton's loss was lamented by Washington in his general orders for September 17, 1776, with a statement, "The gallant and brave Colonel Knowlton would have been an honor to any country, having fallen yesterday while gloriously fighting." In 1995, the Military Intelligence Corps Association established the Lieutenant Colonel Thomas W. Knowlton Award. The Knowlton Award recognizes individuals who have contributed significantly to the promotion of Army military intelligence in ways that stand out in the eyes of the recipients, their superiors, subordinates, and peers. These individuals must also demonstrate the highest standards of integrity and moral character, display an outstanding degree of professional competence, and serve the Military Intelligence Corps with dedication. This has been provided by Wikipedia and is a dry recital of Lieutenant Colonel Knowlton's short life and career. What is missing is the story of a 15-year-old boy who, with his older brother, fought in the Battle of the French and Indian War. What were his? How did his letters home read as his parents read them over and over? What is missing is his thoughts upon seeing the tropical beauty of the colonial Cuban. What is missing is the fierce patriotism of a husband and father of nine children who already served in the military and served his community as a selectman, who left his civilian life to return to fight for freedom. What is missing is the power and strength of a single man who propels others to be the best of the best 238 years after his death. This show is dedicated to Lieutenant Colonel Knowlton, to all of the brave men and women who have served from the very beginning of our nation to today and who will serve. Dedicated to the military men to the emergency response. God bless you.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be. Others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name,
find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network.
Southern sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
Americans.